two or three things. One is to uncover raw data sets with interesting data to tackle interesting questions. So we do lots of observational studies. The other thing that we try to do, and as I'll probably talk to you in probably about 1.5 hours, is randomized experiments in Brazil, and especially about education. This, the last couple of years we've been doing and studying a lot of education. Our focus has been education. But we are also interested in other issues like health, political economy, and things like that. So basically this is a statement of who we are. Now, we have a website running soon. We're bringing it up. So very soon we have like more material or papers and information about our center. Anyways, this paper is basically, this presentation is going to be probably a potpourri of two or three papers that we put together. They are all about similar issues related to grading, or how students grade, how teachers grade their students. And as I mentioned earlier today, they are all written, and all of this research was sponsored by this grant from the Ministry of Education that we got in 2007. So this first piece, discrimination goes to school, racial differences in performance assessment by teachers, is motivated by the following issue. What explains the observed differences in socioeconomic outcomes for blacks and whites? Probably at the beginning of this talk, we have a lot of interaction overlap with what Professor Ricardo said earlier today in his first presentation. But I'll repeat that because some of you are not here. So what explains differences in socioeconomic outcomes for blacks and whites in the labor market, for instance? The first factor that you could mention is simply discrimination. Maybe employers discriminate against black employees. Therefore, they make lower wages and they're more likely to be unemployed. The second thing, which will base most of our reasoning on this reason, is that probably skills brought to the market by black and white employees are different at the moment they hit the market after concluding of graduating from high school or college. Or probably you have a mix of the two, in which probably if you expect to do bad, or if you expect your investment in human capital not to be much value in the market, probably you invest less in human capital acquisition. So these two things are hard to disentangle, I'll mention that. Part of the explanation can be found in this seminal paper by Neil and Johnson, in which basically what they do, they look at employees, they basically run a wage regression, controlling for skills accumulated before entering the market. So what does that mean? You're basically controlling for some sort of proficiency or human capital that has been acquired. And the conclusion is that those factors, those pre-market factors, can account for a huge fraction of this wage differential between blacks and whites. And sometimes it's even like positive, favoring blacks. The second piece of the literature, Fry and Levitt, they observe that students before entering elementary school, if you control for lots of socioeconomic variables, they have very similar proficiency. But when you look at them again at third grade, even after controlling for all of these factors that might affect proficiency, they are already different. So there's something related to race that you cannot explain. So something arises in the very first years of school. So what factors in the schooling system could help us to explain those differences that emerge in the very first years of elementary school? Our purpose in this paper is to investigate the roles of the causes imposed by discrimination within schools. So we want to look into the school environment and try to observe or try to understand, to identify those obstacles black children face in acquiring productive skills. Why do we focus on grading? Because we think grading might be an important tool for teachers to communicate to students and parents. So basically, I'll mention that later on, is that probably it's the most effective way for teachers to communicate or to summarize how important or how productive is investment in human capital. Our evidence using this Brazilian data set is that we find robust grading differentials against black students. So the way apparently teachers give lower grades to black students, even controlling for proficiency and other factors. So what is different in Brazil? Why should we care about Brazil? So first thing in Brazil is that we have a high proportion of interracial marriages. And as a consequence of that, a larger proportion of mixed race individuals. As we mentioned earlier today, that proportion of the brown population that is not very common in the United States or other countries.
50%, is that what you said? The portion of the population that...
It's about 40%.
40%.
Brown, I'd say the breakdown for on our data set is 50% white, self-declared white, 40% brown and 10% black. This is the approximate.
And Asian, though?
It's 5-4%.
It's small.
Okay.
By the way, we dropped them from the data set. Yeah. We're not concerned about them that much. Nothing against them, but it's just saying that.
It's okay.
There was a small riot in the back of the room.
The second thing is that we had no experiments with informal or formal segregation mechanisms. Actually, in Brazil, we try to think of ourselves as being like this mixture of all cultures and races in a way that we don't discriminate against anybody, which is particularly probably not right. Despite that, we still have large and persistent disparities between whites and non-whites in several dimensions, including wages and wealth, as observed by this Human Development Report by the United Nations. So racial differentials are still a major social challenge facing Brazil. And especially since we have this slavery, Brazil was one of the last countries to abolish slavery, so it's a shame. We just abolished slavery in 1888. Just Cuba, I think, abolished slavery after Brazil. We still have this persistent wage differentials between blacks and whites. And anti-discrimination policy should be a component of any poverty reduction program to implement because race is very related to wealth. Then, back, with more focus on our interest here, how can racial discrimination present itself in the school environment? How can a teacher discriminate against a student, or how can that student feel like discriminated against in the school environment? First, we can have like that teachers can allocate less effort to, say, students of a particular race or gender. Or the way groups form, in this case, if groups form with this racial identity, we can have like adverse peer effects working. Or, and this is our specific focus, probably grading practices and grading standards discriminating for or against a particular group. Why should discrimination in grading practices have real consequences? First, gradings, as I mentioned, are a signal to children and their families about how productive is investment in human capital. So if you're a kid or parent of a kid that keeps getting bad grades, probably how should you read that? You should read that no matter how much effort you put forward in order to get to study and acquire human capital, that investment doesn't have a good return, so you don't learn much. Second, students can discrimination can hurt students' non-cognitive abilities. So you keep getting bad grades, that can hurt your self-esteem, your confidence, and your motivation to keep studying. And also, I have like a third argument, which I call the tip of the iceberg. So if you identify discriminatory practices in grading, that may mean that probably you find in other dimensions in school that we don't observe directly. So that can indicate that you should look further to try to locate more discrimination within the school environment. So how is this research relevant for other developing countries? Because other developing countries somehow experience the same phenomenon that Brazil is experiencing. So this rapid growth of enrollment and increased diversity within the classroom. As Professor Madeira mentioned in the last presentation, we have this process in the 1990s that basically enrollment increased substantially in Brazil. To some extent, our quantitative problem has been solved. All kids of school age are enrolled at school. They are not learning much, but they are sitting there, which solves part of the problem. So other countries like India, Kenya, South Africa, they are all experiencing the same thing. And in this diversity, especially if it's related to race, brings some challenges to the school, to the schools, to the school systems, and to teachers that they are probably not equipped to solve as of now. For other countries, more developed countries, for instance, France has the North Africans that are probably now or will be enrolling in the public school system. The same for the Turkish in German or for the Mexicans and other Hispanic minorities in the United States. So this thing probably applies to other scenarios, to other circumstances. So our conceptual framework, traditional models, they try to understand achievement looking at several inputs. So you rank or you have some inputs on the right side of your equation, and you want to understand how those inputs affect some measures of output, especially proficiency. We are not interested in that. What you're trying to identify here is a grading equation. So you want to understand how teachers assign grades to the students, right? Our concern here, instead of understanding proficiency is not our, say, left side variable, it's a right side variable for us. So conditional proficiency, we want to understand how grades vary. Some of the institutional background, I'll go quickly through this because probably it's the second or third time that you see this thing. So I'll probably skip more quickly. Four levels. It's very similar to the American system. I'm not spending too much time about it.
The big difference, as I understand it's important in Brazil, is that you cut off, they have to change schools in grade 5.
They do.
And in some cases in rural areas, grade 5 is far away. And there's a big dropout rate after grade 4, non-continuation. Not so much in your state, but in other parts of Brazil, it's a big problem.
There is also some difference that may matter a lot for us in terms of information that teachers have about their students. From grade 1 to 4 in elementary school, every kid has only one teacher for all of the subjects.
Right.
So we have the same teacher teaching in like language, math, sciences, social studies. Once you move to the 5th grade, you have a specific teacher for each subject. So that's a major change. You're changing from a situation in which you interact with one teacher for the whole academic year, from a situation in which basically you sit in a room and every hour you have a different guy sitting or teaching in front of you, lecturing about things. So that's also, I'll have to refer to that later on. Another thing, as you mentioned too, is that we have this social promotion policy since the mid-90s. That was the way to make kids stay in school. The perception that we had before is that in the mid-90s is that kids drop out of school because they are retained systematically in a grade. So how do you solve that? Basically, we don't retain them, we just let them go. And they can only be retained in grades 4, 8, and 11, which are the last years of elementary, middle, and high school. Up to September 2007, there were no grading guidelines for school teachers in the state school system. Only in October 2007, the Secretariat of Education decided to adopt this rule. It's a like Maya rule, that grades have to be on a 0-10 numeric scale with unitary increments. So we don't have this A, B, C, D, and F as in the United States, but you have a 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of 10. Then 10 being the best grade. And there's no instruction, officially at least, on how to assign grades according to the level of proficiency attained by the student. So in one particular school, a 5 can mean something. In another school, a 5 can mean a completely different thing. Our data, we have first this this non-line, this is a portion of the administrative data. We have non-line grades, which are basically a transcript of every student enrolled in the state school system in the year of 2000, and this is year 2007, right? With grades assigned by the teachers. So we have a very detailed description of how teachers graded these students. We also have attendance records, partial grades that you get every 2 months. And you have 4 partial grades that they should add up at the end of the academic year to your final grade. And as I mentioned, in grades 1 to 4, students have just one teacher teaching all subjects. The second piece of information that we have that's going to be very important is this CERESP test, as you mentioned, which is this proficiency test, which is taken in November. It's close to the Brazilian academic year that goes from February to November. And students have to take this test in grades 1, 2, 4, 6, 8, and 11. We are particularly interested in grade 4, 8, and 11, because only these grades students can fail. This is how to say that
they face repetition.
Yeah, they face like this is from this test covers math and Portuguese only, and Portuguese language only, not any other subject. Lots of test takers and lots of schools. São Paulo school system, the state of São Paulo school system is probably one of the largest in the world. We're talking about 5,500 schools. One important thing to observe is that grading of this test is completely electronic, and the essay is graded by a committee of teachers, but not the same as the teachers that we use. We are running regressions that have this format. So on the left side, what I want to explain is the non-line grades, the grades assigned by the teachers. And I want to explain that using, say, the information, the proficiency attained by the student in the blind proficiency test that has no human interference, no room for discrimination, on the race of the student, on a vector of controls, and a fixed effect for the class. So I'm controlling not only for school fixed effects, but also for class fixed effects, or things that affect every student in the same class in the same way. The parameter of interest here is this theta. To what extent this theta is different from zero? Say if this thing is positive, that means that the students that are black, for which RIC is 1, get a better grade conditional on proficiency. Right? This is, at the end of the day, this is the thing I'm interested in, identifying that specific parameter. If theta is different from zero, this is consistent with at least two explanations. One could be this Beckerian story of taste discrimination. So basically, teachers give lower grades to black students simply because they're black, and teachers don't like black students. That's one possibility. The other possibility is statistical discrimination, which means that probably you are looking at race to infer about other attributes that you do not observe directly, but can help you to figure out what's the real proficiency of that student. So in this sense, what teachers are trying to do is the right thing. They are trying to give a student a grade which is very close to the real proficiency, but you have to rely, given that you have very partial information about that student, you have to rely on the information that's provided to you by race. So probably if you're black, you come from a more impoverished background, you didn't attend good school, or things like that. So therefore, you must be less proficient, and therefore, you deserve a lower grade. Not because I don't like you, but because I think you are less proficient. Okay, so say, a big challenge to our profession is to disentangle these two things, or to devise some sort of empirical strategy to separate out what is due to this discrimination from what is due to this statistical discrimination. Because the policy consequences of these two things are very different. This thing is about almost something that's in Brazil is criminal. Discrimination against gender, race, or anything in Brazil is a crime. So the way to deal with these kids or with these teachers is probably lawsuits or things like that. If you're talking about statistical discrimination, we have to provide them with more information about the students. Let me move on and present you some results. So the raw difference between blacks and whites on a 0-100 scale is about 3.151. That means that on average, blacks get lower scores than whites by 3 points out of 100. Once I control for inter-class differences, once I add there some class fixed effect, that difference drops down to 2.5. And I keep adding other controls. One important control is the blind scores. So controlling for proficiency, those differences fall down substantially to 0.96. But they persist even after adding other controls. Okay, they are small, they are tiny differences, but they are there. They are persistent. No matter what controls I add to my regression, they are still there. The same is true, this is for mathematics, the same is true for language. The differences are still there. Even after controlling for lots of things, I still find some residual difference that it's related to race and I cannot explain by any other of my controls, other factors that might affect my regression. Here, what we do, we basically have other measures of performance. For instance, what is the chance that a student is classified as competent on the subject by the teacher? Which means, what is the chance that the student gets a grade above 5? 5 or above?
Given the passing grade. 5 is the passing grade.
5 should be the passing grade, by the way.
What's the maximum?
It's 10. Technically, if you get a grade above 5, you are considered by the teacher as proficient on the subject. And as you can see here, even that you are black, that's interesting because this gives you some useful information. Given that you are black, the chances of getting, say, a passing grade are higher. This is related to a phenomenon that you sort of find in another paper that we wrote about grading standards, which is the phenomenon of grade inflation. So usually what we have is that blacks are on the, say, the left tail of the distribution of grades and proficiency. And what teachers do in Brazil, basically, with this policy of automatic promotion, they push everybody up. Since the black students are more likely to be in the left tail, by pushing like non-proficient students up, you're sort of favoring black students. But look, what's the probability that you are above the average of the class? Holding your proficiency constant and looking only at your race, it's lower for blacks. So sort of you are compressing blacks. So if you're on the left tail, if you're a very non-proficient black student, I bump you up until you become like proficient. I give you a grade above 5. But I don't let you go too much further. So I don't let you to be, say, the best in class probability, for instance. Say, this is what's the chance that a black student is classified as the best in the class holding proficiency constant. So it's negative. So the fact that you're black makes you less likely to be considered by your teacher the best in class. And the opposite is true for the worst in class. If you're a black student, even holding your proficiency constant, so I'm looking here at the black and white student of the same proficiency, the fact that you're black makes you more likely to be classified by your teacher as worst in class. What I did so far is for fourth graders. You have the same pattern for sixth graders, for eighth graders, and for 11th graders. Things are a bit stronger in the later graders, for in grades 6, 8, and 11. So apparently our discrimination is stronger in the later grades. That's consistent with statistical discrimination. Why is that so? Because, as I mentioned, in grade 4, students have only one teacher. That teacher knows a lot about the student. The amount of interaction between teacher and student in fourth grade is huge compared to the amount of interaction between teacher and student in the later grades. So probably a teacher is better informed about the real proficiency of the student in fourth grade as opposed to the later grades. And therefore, the effects are stronger in later grades. I mean, that's only a story, a possible explanation for that. We don't have, at this point, any way of testing that thing. My conjecture. All those gaps, as I mentioned, the increase in later grades, all possible measures. Conclusions, and bottom line is that we find robust and consistent, although it's small. Evidence of underscoring and underranking of black students in primary and secondary schools. Discrimination against blacks happens particularly at the top of the proficiency distribution. So that means that looking at, say, a black and a white student of same proficiency, if you are at the top, if you look at proficiency at the top, the black is more underrated at the top than at the middle of the distribution. So this discrimination is particularly focused on students of high proficiency. And this finds somehow suggests, as I mentioned, we don't have no way of testing them as of now. With this gap in free market skills, it may be associated with imprecise signals. This story about statistical discrimination, about this grades issued by teachers. I will go over and do gender now. You want to ask the questions now because about gender is
different. I think so, yes. Questions now in this first half of the presentation. Dale?
Okay. I know nothing about myself. I mean, I just